The expectorators get a t-shirt and 10 bucks.
We want to study all the students in September before they really change their behavior and then come back and study them again in the spring while they're still freshmen, after they've settled into their peer group, they've overall established their patterns.
Dr. Ken Kendler at the Virginia Institute for Psychiatric and Behavioral Genetics.
Going off to college is an extraordinary social experiment. You move from your home, from your own peer group, you get plopped down. Typically, most students may know one or other two other people in this huge class of 3,000. And what do you do the next several months? You make new sets of friends, new sets of social relations, you know, new partying patterns, and often those involve use of substances. Are you going to be the kind where, you know, a few moderate beers on a Saturday night, or if you're not really quite blotto drunk, that's not seen as socially acceptable in your peer group?
Kendler and his colleague, Dr. Danielle Dick, hope to gain insight into how genetic and environmental factors influence the development of psychiatric or substance disorders.
What we really want to know is that if you look at an 18-year-old just as he's entering in school, how can you tell the one who's going to use alcohol, tobacco, illicit substances in a basically healthy manner, socially acceptable, recreational use? And what's going to predict the person who's going to fall off the end?
Experience, he said, tells us.
In any group of 100, especially boys, there are going to be a group of 5, 8, even 10 who in their early 20s are still going to be having significant problems of substance use. Instead of them being able to master it, to have a good time, to party hard, and then get back to their studies, to get on and get going with life as you do when you finish up college, that the substance use really impairs their ability to meet those goals. It's unfortunately really common.
The goal is to eventually be able to identify who is at risk.
And what we already know, in some extent, is that genes play a moderate role. You really do partially inherit the vulnerability to have problems with drinking. But environment is also absolutely critical, especially peer groups, parental expectations. And our job is really in this project to unravel the interrelationship between the genetic and environmental factors. That's interesting. That's the kind of core of human development, but it's complicated. And you need big samples, and you need to be able to measure the genes, and you have to follow people longitudinally to get a chance to really tease apart. You know, think about this as a kind of tapestry of human development and trying to understand how the various webs of genetic risk factors might interrelate with who you choose as friends. How do those friends encourage you either towards a more healthy kind of use of substances or something that's more deviant? How does that all develop over time?
Students are asked to go online and spend 30 to 45 minutes completing a questionnaire.
We want to ask about how they get along with people, how their family relations were, do they like to drink, why do they like to drink, what do they think about smoking, have they ever had any problems with drink, how do they feel in their moods, what do they like in their peer group. So getting a pretty diverse view of their current functioning.
Yesterday, the spitting part began.
We will verify their completion, and we will give them a nice, crisp $10 bill, and then offer to collect a DNA sample.
The data, Dr. Kendler added, has value in identifying the causes that lead to not only alcohol and substance abuse, but also to students dropping out or experiencing psychological problems. Learn more online at SPIT, the number 4, science.vcu.org. John Ogle, WCVE News.